To the thirsty, I will give water as a gift from the spring of the water of life. It's what we're eventually going to be talking about, but there's a couple things that I want to talk about before we get to that. And as today is our annual meeting, I want to put before our congregation at least some of the developments as pertains to our three parish cluster, the Episcopal Churches of the Upper Yellowstone, comprised of St. John in Emigrant, St. Andrews here in Livingston, St. Mark's in Big Timber. And for any of you who have been here for any length of time, you know that that is one of the difficulties of our arrangement. Three parishes pretty much guarantees that everybody is going to live with a sort of residual level of unhappiness and discontent. Everybody, nobody's happy, and you just try to make sure that nobody is unequally unhappy, which is a weird kind of way to keep balance. But it does seem, going forward and in anticipating my retirement in a year and change, that a long-anticipated move seems to be happening, which is to say, St. Mark's, which has long desired a priest of their own to live in Big Timber and be a minister not only to the parish itself, but to the town of Big Timber, they are going to seek their own half-time parish priest. And then it looks as if St. John's and St. Andrew's are going to form a two-person yoked parish, which, as I've been saying, as you're looking around the country for applicants, The appeal of our wonderful situation here goes down exponentially when you add the third parish. It's recognized as a more or less untenable situation, which somehow we've been able to make work and actually work fairly well for these years. But I think going forward, it's a step in the right direction. So now, as we move to the water of life, one of the things I do every week, and it began as so many things begin, I wasn't quite conscious I was doing it, but every week I choose art for the cover of our bulletins. And I enjoy that a lot, because you get to sort of review the history of Western art through depictions of biblical scenes, like incidents from the life of Jesus. And so this week I was looking around and I read Revelation and the New Jerusalem. I wondered if there's any art pertaining to that. Most of it is all modern and really bad. So then I moved to the Water of Life. And in connection with the Water of Life, I came across what I think is actually a fairly famous sculpture by Stephen Broadbent. It's a sculpture found in the cloister garden of Chester Cathedral in England. And what it depicts is the encounter, the title of the sculpture is The Water of Life, and it depicts the encounter between Jesus and the woman of Samaria. And to just briefly recount that story, Jesus and his companions, his disciples, walking through Samaria. And Jesus asks the woman at the well, the Samaritan woman at the well, for a drink of water. And in doing that, he is just breaking rule after rule after rule. He's a man talking to a woman, which was itself inappropriate. He was a Jewish man talking to a woman of Samaria. And, you know, whatever way you want to understand the conflict in the Middle East now, the Jews and the Samaritans were an early version of that. Completely estranged, alienated. They didn't like each other at all, and they thought each was a heretic, basically. And so for Jesus to be talking to this woman, a Jew, ask a drink of water of me, a woman of Samaria? And then, of course, she was, in addition to all of these sort of categorical things wrong with her, she was a woman of notorious past. And so you have this sculpture. And I think Stephen Broadbent, the artist, understands a lot about who Jesus was. First of all, he is below the woman and receiving from her. And it's almost as if they are in this perfect reciprocal giving and receiving. Each is giving to the other, each is receiving from the other. But it's the eyes. It's the eyes. The way he is looking at her, the way she is looking at him, with really astonishing intimacy. It almost feels as if they're about to kiss. And we can all imagine what that woman experienced when she felt herself beheld in that way by Jesus. We know something of it because what she did immediately following was she ran into town and she said, "This guy told me everything I ever did." And that in itself was not particularly remarkable because I think she had been living all her life with people telling her what everything she had ever done. She was living with that all the time, her many different husbands, the scandal of her life. She knew what it was like to have other people tell her what she had done. But Jesus wasn't telling her in the same way because there was no judgment in it. It was simply, "I see you. I see you to the depth of your being." And what she experienced was not the annihilation of judgment and shame and scandal and exclusion, but she felt herself to be completely accepted just as she was, which is absolutely the essence of the gospel. You are perfectly accepted just as you are. I mean, in that wonderful paradox of dialectical behavior therapy, it begins on that side. You are perfectly accepted just as you are, and you have to change. So it's both of those things. But what Jesus communicated, I think, to that woman was the profound acceptance that said, I can live in my story. I can live in my story and in my life, and I don't need to run away from it. I don't need to feel ashamed of it. I am loved just as I am. And, you know, this is the, you know, we say something to that effect every time we begin a service. You know, "Almighty God, to you all hearts are open, all desires known, and from you no secrets are hid." We say that, and the words roll fairly easily off our lips. But what our hearts do with that truth is something rather different. I think most of us are really quite ambivalent about being transparent. What happens if I'm really known? I mean, maybe our stories are not quite as checkered as the woman of Samaria. Nonetheless, we all have secrets, and we all, I think, have a fundamental doubt about whether I, in the depth of my being, can I really be loved? Can I really be accepted? If somebody really knows who I am, will I be loved? Bye, Connor. So this, you know, the woman of Samaria could have turned away. I mean, the rich young man turned away. You know, Jesus said, you know, there's something you lack, which is you're too attached to all your possessions. You know, you'll find freedom if you're able to give some of them up. He turned away. He went away sad because the challenge was too great. The woman of Samaria let herself be loved by Jesus. You know, and that's that wonderful line that we hear in the Gospels. "Blessed are you if you take no offense at me." Because, I mean, Jesus walks right into our hearts and knows us. And, you know, we can be welcoming like the woman of Samaria and said, "Oh, he told me everything I did, and I've never felt this loved and accepted in my life." Or I can say, "Oh, somebody yet again here to judge me, and I'm going to close up and I'm going to shut down." And, you know, that's our ambivalence. Do we want to be known? And then this other thing, when we speak of the water of life, One of the places I went with it is to our ritual of baptism. And what I'd like to point out in this story of this encounter between Jesus and the woman of Samaria is what we have here is the substance of baptism. We don't have the ritual, no water on the head. It's a drink of water. And the language is not baptismal language. But what we have is the baptismal reality, which is you have someone, a woman of Samaria, who in her own mind was pretty smudged, pretty dirty. She'd been through a lot, and it was pretty hard for her to stand upright. But in this encounter with Jesus, it's as if the love she experienced there washed her clean and gave her back to herself. Ah, I can see myself again as precious. And I have not felt that about myself in a very, very long time. I can see myself as precious again. And when Jesus sends us out with the new commandment, to love one another, I hope we hear it as the correlate of go and baptize all nations and make them disciples. The baptizing that Jesus is talking about is not a church ritual. It's the experience of love. It's beholding each other without judgment, with that profound acceptance that, as we hear in that line from Acts, it's not what God has made clean you should not call profane. It is what God has made you shall not call profane. Everything that God has made bears the stamp of the Creator. And we are the ones who are charged with recognizing that in everyone and everything. And when we do, we baptize the world and make it new. Look, I am making all things new, a new heaven and a new earth. And that's what's at stake in our giving or withholding of love. When we look into each other's eyes, do we see each other? And do we let ourselves be known in that deep, deep human ache that Paul speaks about at the end of 1 Corinthians, where he says, you know, now we see through a glass darkly, but then we will know fully, even as we are fully known. It's as if that's our future, finally, to step out of our many hiding places into the light so that we can know and be known. One of the symbols for that is our symbol for today, the water of life. It flows through all things. All things are watered by the water of life. It's up to us to pay attention enough to notice it, to drink from it ourselves, and to hold that cup of water to those around us.